the CB Wallop podcast. I'm Phil Lucas.
And I'm Phil Jarrod. Why are we here, Phil?
Well, we are going to talk about the world's greatest disasters. What went wrong, how it went wrong, and whether it was our fault or God's fault.
And I don't know if this has occurred to you, Phil, but it is not our intention, certainly not my intention, to make light of the sometimes quite substantial mortality rates in some of these disasters.
No.
We're just interested, like how many times have I got to tell you, we're just interested in finding out what went wrong, okay?
Mm.
And be honest, if it came on the news, you'd be interested, wouldn't you?
Certainly, I'd be straight down the petrol station for snacks, straight on the sofa, Sky News, veg out.
Absolutely. What are we talking about this week?
We are talking about the BBC soap opera El Dorado.
In the early 1990s, the BBC's very survival was in doubt. Under threat of privatisation, it desperately needed to fight back in a bitter ratings war with ITV, with only EastEnders to take on Coronation Street and Emmerdale. So 10 years ago, the BBC unveiled a secret weapon in an obscure Spanish village. It was the biggest press launch in the corporation's history. The BBC was risking millions on a brand new soap full of sun, sex, and sangria. Only behind the facade of smiles, things were crumbling.
How old were you when El Dorado came out?
I thought I was younger than I was. I had it in my head El Dorado was kind of mid-80s,
yeah.
But it was early 90s, so I would have been 22.
Shit.
How old would you have been, 12?
What was it? Yeah, was it 92?
Yeah.
Yeah, 12, I guess.
Bless
I remember
you.
It. I do remember it. But it
in
was
between
more...
furious masturbation as you were 12? Discovering yourself. Well, you're learning, aren't you,
I
at
suppose
that age?
You're learning at that age, yeah. I remember it being a thing, and I remember it sort of crashing and burning quite spectacularly. But I wouldn't be able to tell you like a plot line, or you know, or a sort of character arc or anything like that. But I do remember it being on. But if you were 22, you probably remember it. Quite
I remember
well.
It quite clearly. Yeah. I really liked it.
Did you?
Yeah.
But it was bad, right?
It was bad. Yeah, it was really bad. It got better.
Yeah.
But it was. Yeah, it was really bad.
Start bad, don't they? And some of them are still, but EastEnders is freaking terrible.
Oh, makes you want to slit your wrists, EastEnders.
Yeah, it really does.
I think EastEnders really sums up the British attitude. It's like misery.
Misery,
we
yeah.
want misery as entertainment.
Yeah.
And we want misery in our real lives. And if we don't have misery...
Just make some misery.
We'll make some misery,
makes
even if we're happy.
Misery up, yeah.
And then so we'll tune in at night and just give me more and more misery.
Yeah, just heap on the misery. Yeah.
Corrie has got it savvy. Corrie puts a bit of misery, disaster, but they pepper it with beautiful written humour
nice jokes,
throughout.
Yeah. Mm. I like the fact that there's characters in Coronation Street who have been in the same, not just the same character, they've been in the same position for years. There's one character, I don't know his name, but every time he comes on screen, he's just lying on a sofa.
I saw William Roach on an interview the other day.
Who's William Roach?
He's Ken Barlow.
Oh, yeah.
He's been in it since the 60s.
Because of a tax thing, right? Is that him?
Is it? I don't know.
I think it's him. I'll check this before I put it out, but I think he basically had a massive tax bill, so he's got to work in Coronation Street until he drops
dead. Oh, well, that might be the reason why he's still there. I don't know, but he's 85.
Jesus.
And he looks amazing.
Yeah.
So working in soaps seems
so,
to keep me young.
So strange that they live and die on the soaps.
Yeah, I mean,
they?
Dot Cotton will never die. I think we've discussed this before.
I think she's probably been dead for a while. Yeah.
That's true. I think we have discussed that she is very much in the Lenin mould. Mould being the operative word.
Oh, that's right, because we did a whole EastEnders special, didn't we, on Ultimate Scrutiny, I remember.
Yeah.
Did you used to watch Brookside?
Brookside I watched for a bit.
I didn't like
early days Brookside I watched.
Yeah.
I watched I never watched Home and Away. I watched Neighbours for a bit because I used to fancy Joe Mangold's wife, Melanie.
Melanie was very attractive.
I fancied her. I met her once in Canterbury.
Really?
Yeah, she was signing for a panto.
Wow.
And at the time, I was a bit worried that she thought I was a bit weird because I was too nervous and didn't know what to say to her. And then my mate said, look, mate, you're one of about 400 people she signed things for. She didn't even give you a second look.
Yeah.
I was fair point. And I'm like, 19, why do I care?
You didn't even pass through the front part of her brain.
No.
You were purely mammalian brain. So, Phil, El Dorado, what was it, Phil?
It
what
was a BBC soap opera set in the fictional town of Los Bassos. on the Costa El Dorado in Spain, and it followed the lives of British and European expatriates there.
When did it happen?
It only ran for 1 year, from the 6th of July 1992 to the 9th of July 1993.
How many people died?
No people, but a lot of actors' souls and reputations bit the dust.
What does El Dorado mean?
We've got three meanings, Phil.
Yeah.
It is a city or country of fabulous riches held by 16th century explorers to exist in South America, or a generic term nowadays for a sort of place of fabulous wealth or opportunity.
Yeah.
And to counter that, there are two real cities in the US, in Arkansas and Kansas, called El Dorado. I bet they're not full of wealth and opportunity.
And they might be. America has some weird names, isn't there? You've got a town called Truth or Consequences.
Have they?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Strange. But we've got Upper Dicker.
Upper Dicker. Upper Dicker. Yes, I like the fact that British place names are a bit like that.
We've got mental place names. I love them.
Plus a town called Tits. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's Tits. So much of that, isn't it?
Yeah. Right, I have given you information on what the word El Dorado means.
Yeah,
you give me some information on what El Dorado, the BBC show, was all about.
Do you remember the 90s, Phil?
I do. It was my golden era.
It was mine as well.
Mm.
The 90s were great, and we were discussing this the other day. I think it is the last sort of great, not mad period of world history.
I agree. I think everything had come together by the sort of mid to late 90s.
Yeah, like mid to late 90s, everything was kind of good. I think, no, problems in the world.
Of course, always will be.
Always will be.
We're a dirty, fetid species.
And it's a complicated system, I've been told, right? And then 9/11 happened. And since 9/11, everything's been mad.
Mm.
I think every year's been mad. 2012 was good.
Well, the Olympics were all right.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Olympics, but it was a blip and, in other words, downward trajectory of absolute insanity. But this happened in the 90s. So in the 90s, very sunny, escapist Australian soaps were everywhere and the public loved them, like Neighbours and Home and Away.
Yeah.
I didn't really watch Home and Away.
Melanie, though.
There was an idea.
Neighbours.
Maybe I've made this up.
Mm.
But there was there an underlying idea that Neighbours was a bit middle class and Home and Away was a little bit working class?
I think there was a bit of that because Home and Away was an ITV.
Oh, of course.
So automatically it's one level lower than the BBC.
Yeah, that's
true. But I think you're all right because I think you're right because Neighbours started as a soap, but I think a lot of people then genuinely, sort of quite well-to-do people, got into Neighbours slightly ironically, then really liked it, and then it became a bit of a
And
thing.
Home and Away was so much about surfing. Wasn't it?
I never watched it.
Well, Neighbours was based on the
some neighbours who lived down on Ramsey Street.
Ramsey Street was based on the street, whereas Home and Away was based on the beach.
Ah, right.
I think.
Surf beach.
And I've been to that beach.
Ooh.
Terribly bleak.
Oh, is it?
Well, I suppose it makes sense because if you're going to film a TV show, you're going to go to Bondi Beach, there's shitloads of people there.
Oh,
it goes
to
like a really bleak.
That's true.
It may have just been, I mean, it's Australia, so it may have been that I've heard they have nice weather quite a lot of the time in Australia, so I might have just been there on a bad day. Okay, the BBC, seeing that Neighbours and Home and Away were so popular, put two and two together and thought they could make their own sunny soap.
Logical.
And it would be as massive a hit as EastEnders had been.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
And they needed it as well because there was a massive ratings war going on at the time because ITV had two soaps, Coronation Street and Emmerdale, and the BBC only had one, which is EastEnders.
Mm.
So, to win the epic ratings war, a couple called John Dark, very good name, and Verity Lambert, just a guess with Verity Lambert, possibly an upper-class lady.
Probably well-to-do, yeah.
Possibly. John Dark and Verity Lambert. Oh, I tell you what, if you went round their house, you'd take a cross. Sound like vampires. John Dark and Verity Lambert came up with the original idea for El Dorado, and they took it to the EastEnders co-creators Tony Holland and Julia Smith.
Mm.
They planned a soap about a group of British expats living in Spain, surrounded by locals and a few other Europeans from all over the continent, liberally scattered in. It was going to be a big soap.
Big?
Big soap.
Okay.
Imagine a big soap.
Like a family bar of imperial leather.
Family bar of soap.
Oh, I always felt with imperial leather it was a bit of luxury, like I was the czar.
Dries the skin, though.
What, imperial leather?
It terribly dries the skin.
Does it?
Well, they may have put some chemical in it now. I remember being when I was a boy, we used to have imperial leather. I remember it terribly dries the skin.
But you had that little like Royal Crest-looking sticker thing on
which
it,
which would
didn't
slip
you?
About.
Yeah. I use a Wright's Coal Tar soap now, because I like to smell like a steam engine.
Coal tar?
Mm.
Does it really smell of coal?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it used to be coal tar.
What?
But then they went, not that good for you to wash yourself down with coal tar.
No.
As we probably found out in the last episode.
Yeah, that's right.
So what they do now is they put a coal scent in it.
Oh.
So it's not actually coal tar, but it's still, you still come out smelling of a coal yard.
We're in this really weird situation now where, like, I'm brushing my teeth with charcoal. Washing my hair with caffeine.
Have you ever had a shampoo that smells so good you think it's got to be tasty?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, they never are they?
Never are tasty.
I had a strawberry one. Yeah, so real. I was like, this has got to taste like strawberry.
And if it's soft as well, it feels like it might have a nice bit of mouthfeel as well. Yeah, but it doesn't have good mouthfeel. Doesn't have it. Don't do it, kids. It's going to be a big soap. It had to be a big soap, Phil. It had to be. Because it was going out at 7 p.m.
Big slot.
Prime. People eating their dinner slot.
Yep.
Monday, Wednesday and Friday.
Meat and two veg.
It was the slot recently vacated by 80s chat show behemoth Wogon.
Oh, that was a big show in the 80s.
My
George Best pissed.
George Best pissed.
Yeah.
David Icke, first time
yes.
he realised David Icke had
yes.
gone mad.
When he went with purple on, didn't he?
He did go with purple on, yeah, yes. and said that everyone was lizards and all the rest of that. Mm. Antiques expert, who later turned out to be a transgender woman.
And then had a fling with Russell Brand.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah. Little about, shit he was, wasn't it?
He was a shit
little
at the time.
13-year-old.
But he was working things out. Wogan had some great ones, but George Best pissed was really good. Oliver Reed pissed, I think, maybe as well.
I remember Oliver Reed pissed on Aspel, and he got up
Aspel.
And he sung Wild Thing.
That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
Every chat show's got out from there. You've got Oliver Reed on Aspel, then the Wogan stuff we said, then, of course, you've got Grace Jones smacking Russell Harty.
Oh, yeah, that's good, that one.
Yeah.
Parkinson, the horrific Meg Ryan.
Oh, I don't know that. I know the Muhammad Ali one.
What's the Muhammad Ali one?
Muhammad Ali gets really annoyed and essentially accuses him of insulting him and his religion.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a few stomach-turning Parkinson ones, actually. The Kenneth Williams one is.
Yeah,
he's talking absolute crap.
They didn't like each other, did they? I don't think a lot of people like Parkinson. Didn't he do that thing where one of those over-50s life insurance policies where you get a free pen just for
really like
applying?
He did the over-50s life insurance. Now, those over-50 life insurance things, he's not in them anymore, but they have a couple that say, hey, have you heard about the over-50s life insurance plan? And the other one goes, oh, you mean the one advertised by Michael Parkinson? And they go, yes. So he's still there in spirit.
I bet they're just meeting, one of them's holding a plant pot.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, hey, have you heard about...
yeah, there's one at the moment when there's a guy who's literally in the middle of something. He's unpacking or something, or he's about to make dinner, and she goes, oh, can you just sort out your life insurance?
He phones up the call centre.
And he phones him up, yeah. Mm. And then he goes back to what he's doing. God bless that thing, that's how sorts of marital arrangements work. Because I think what would happen is, are you going to sort out your life insurance? Like, I'll do it! I'm doing a dinner, can I have a minute? I'll fucking do it. Jesus. That's what that advert should be. Okay, I loved Wogan, though.
Oh, it was great.
He was always just on the edge of embarrassing.
Very
never
savvy.
Never really tipped over. Mm. So the BBC, they threw so much money and so much fucking marketing behind this sunny, glamorous soap opera. They spent £2 million building an actual working town.
Blimey.
I mean, that's hubris, I think. It's a nice idea, but...
You're staking a lot by doing that. Mind you, Brookside did that, didn't they?
Did they?
Brookside was a real road that was built. In the event that Brookside didn't work out, those houses could have been sold on as perfectly normal houses, which is exactly what's happened.
Clever.
Mm.
That is clever. Yeah. It's more clever than this.
Yeah.
They made an actual working town. Mm. The town was set in the hills above Marbella. And it contained real houses, shops and amenities.
It's not the most obvious location, though, is it? I mean, that's not going to be cheap, is it?
Oh, it's not going to be cheap. And I was thinking as well, like, the difficulty of getting anything made. I mean, I know that we're quite low level. Mm. But, you know, if you sort of, like, I've pitched ideas for shows. You know, and you go, you know, it's going to be set in a flat. And they go, oh, God, a flat. Oh, we're going to have to find a flat. That's going to be expensive. How did they get past, first we build a city? Step one, we build the city.
On the ground?
Oh, no. High in the hills! In this country? No. Millions! of pounds, BBC spent a further £8 million developing the show. £8 million.
That's a lot of money in those days.
In those days.
Yeah.
Wonder what that is adjusted for inflation.
Well, I reckon as an uneducated guess, so I reckon that's probably getting in the region of £15 million
you reckon?
Now.
Ballpark.
Yeah, you know.
Ballpark figure, just chucked it out.
Yeah, no idea. Just got to have an opinion like everything nowadays.
Got to have an opinion.
Yeah, just got to have an opinion on it.
I've got an opinion on maths, mate. That's my opinion. You can't tell me it's wrong. I think 2 plus 2 equals 10, and you can't tell me I'm wrong because that's how I feel. Yes, they spent that money on advertising, marketing, and developing the show, and it was going to be the TV launch of the decade. I remember the launch.
Yes, yes.
Big old, big fanfare. Tony Jordan, who wrote El Dorado's very first episode, remembered the hype growing. He said, Phil,
at some point, the commercial people of the BBC started thinking, hang on, we're part of Europe now. This could be the first Euro soap that could play not just in the UK, but all over Europe.
Another bit of hubris, isn't it? I mean, I keep saying hubris, but it's not really, is it? There's no reason why you wouldn't want big things for the thing that you're doing, you know. And if you put a shitload of money in it, you'd be fairly confident it was going to be a success.
I guess so. I guess the problem is it was almost like the confidence was there before it was tested and tried.
Yeah.
But I suppose that you've got to have hope.
I mean, maybe it's just because everyone's really cautious now, and caution doesn't always pay off, does it? But you could have started at Elstree.
Yeah, yeah. Build it up a bit.
Build it up a bit. And then yeah. Go, do you know what? Now we're moving to Spain. Yeah. And like, oh my God, they're actually filming it in Spain.
I mean, the Carry On team, they barely left Pinewood.
Yeah, exactly.
Where did they go?
Brighton.
Brighton, Snowdon, and Camber Sands.
Yeah, exactly.
About
and they made
got.
Films about Arabia.
Yeah. Desert, Camber Sands.
Camber Sands.
Khyber Pass, Snowdon.
Yeah.
So, Carry On Abroad, Spain, car park, Pinewood Studios covered in sand.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I miss those days that I didn't actually even live through.
Oh, I love nostalgia for an era I never knew.
Isn't it? Brilliant.
I love standing on bridges on old train stations in heritage steam railways, imagining what it would be like in the 1930s. And, of course, that would be lovely as long as I was very, very wealthy in the 1930s and had no health problems.
No, exactly. One of the two or three races that didn't get you killed. Was it even two or three? It's really one, isn't it, that doesn't get you into trouble. Okay, wicked. So basically, to make a long story short, the BBC, they wanted ratings, mate, right? They were worried about ITV making loads of money, and so they splurged a shitload of cash on building a town in Spain and filling it with actors to make a new soap opera. Phil, what happened?
Well, the first episode aired on the 6th of July 1992. It was awful, and the critics hated it. The Guardian's Nancy Banks-Smith said it had the look of a situation comedy whose laughter track has been lost. I wish for a tidal wave to wash the whole thing away. Pre-tsunami, so she's allowed to say seemingly offensive things like that.
Nancy Banks-Smith as well, she's not a person who would watch El Dorado. Listen to that name.
Well, she writes for The Guardian, so
Guardian
definitely not.
Sometimes, when they're reviewed, they think, mate, wind it in a bit. It's not the end of the world. It's a sunny
it's
soap opera.
It's not Citizen Kane, is it?
It's not Citizen Kane. Take it for what it is. Was it entertaining and the rest of that? I mean, maybe it wasn't.
Well, this is the thing, Phil. Punters hated it.
Oh.
First episode had an audience appreciation index. I don't know what that is, but I guess it goes up to 100.
You think so?
El Dorado had 37, which apparently is the worst in memory. Also, they had hoped for 10 million viewers, but by the end of the first month, they were getting just 2.8 million. That is fewer than Panorama.
That's amazing.
And nobody watches Panorama.
I wonder if 2.8... Is 2.8 million good now? It isn't, is it? It's
still
bad.
2.8 is bad, but there are shows on Channel 4. Like I think Bake Off was getting that kind, and they were going, that's okay.
Really?
Yeah. But 2.8 million on...
It's so stratified now.
Primetime BBC One. This is pre-internet.
Oh, yeah. 7 o'clock.
Yeah, this is at the era where Only Fools and Horses was pulling in 18, 19, 20 million.
Jesus.
And this is primetime, replacing old Terry Wogan.
Yeah,
and,
which would have got massive
figures. While you're eating your meat and two veg.
Yeah.
2.8 million. Nothing.
Okay, so what was wrong with it then?
Well, lots of things. In short, dubious acting, sound problems, implausible plots.
All right, I take the point, but all of the other soaps have them.
Nah, well, this is why we need to look at El Dorado specifically.
Okay.
Let's do it in turn. Let's look at acting.
Okay.
Although the show featured many professional actors, many of the cast were hugely inexperienced actors whose limitations were plain to see from the off. Prior to the filming, for example, some of the cast didn't even know what a read-through was.
Cool.
And of course, the tabloids, they had a field day with this. There was one German guy in the show, and I remember him. The character was called Dieter Schultz.
Cool.
So not stereotypical German. No. And he was played by a chap called Kaya Mura.
They could have called him Von Schultz. A missed opportunity, I think.
Old Kai was in an interview said that he was just bumming around Spain when he was 18 and he saw that a TV company were looking to cast a young blonde German lad for some filming they were doing in the area. So he dyed his hair blonde, went along for the interview, even though he hadn't done any acting before. He had, though, he said, played the trumpet on stage as a kid.
That's all you need.
That's all you need. Went along to the audition, got the part. He recalls, I had no idea what anyone was talking about. They were all going, this is for the BBC. It's going to be big, like EastEnders. Do you have an inkling how big this is going to be? And I said, I have no idea. I don't even know what the BBC is.
You're auditioning for make-up movies.
Oh, there's a bit of Dutch in there, wasn't there? A bit of Russian.
It was very
pan-European. Very me, you know.
You're inclusive, aren't you? I've no idea. That's fine, right? You can do a German accent, that's fine these days.
I don't care whether you can or can't. I've just done it.
Yeah, good point. Yeah,
I am the dictator of my own creativity. Foreign actors, we just mentioned there. That was another thing. I think that's quite commendable that they got loads of foreign actors in, because what they wanted to do is that they wanted to have sort of people from all over Europe. So if they were Spanish people, obviously the natives, then they actually wanted Spanish actors. If they were Germans, they wanted real Germans.
Which is great.
I think that's really commendable and well ahead of its time. But the problem was that I think that was a little bit too radical for the early 90s. And the real problem there was that sometimes their accents, because they weren't native English speakers, were so strong that it was actually really hard to work out what the hell they were saying.
Yeah.
But I actually remember this really clearly. I think a bigger problem was before they kind of had a revamp midway through, they didn't even make these actors speak English.
They were speaking their
they
own language.
They actually spoke their own language
subtitled
it. Now, that's fantastic.
But they don't like subtitles.
This is a British early 90s soap opera watching public. They're not going to accept
I wonder if they
subtitles.
Had, like, I wonder what would happen if they stuck subtitles into, like, they had a character in Emmerdale who just...
I don't think it would work nowadays.
I don't think if it's never
so
happened.
So ahead of its time. It's not ahead of its time, but...
No, it is ahead of its time, isn't it? Because now dramas have subtitles in. Now, if you have, like, a German character in a film or something, they don't do what they used to do in the 70s, do they? They don't go, Viva l'attack and that! No, they don't do that. They have
Nobody speaks like that when they're doing German accent.
No, they don't. You're right.
But even I was 22, I watched it, and I was thinking, look, this is just pointless. Just give them an English accent.
Yeah.
But they were quite big on realism would have them speaking their own accent to each other. So I think it's really noble and commendable, but not a good idea.
Didn't work. What a shame.
These are the same people that would regularly watch Telly Addicts with Noel.
I love Telly Addicts.
Yeah, it was quite good.
Oh, it wasn't good. So what are the other reasons it bollocksed up then?
Okay, well, technical reasons. Quite a simple one, really. As a result of filming in the bare-walled villas of the £2 million high-in-the-hills constructed set, that meant that there were loads of sound and acoustic problems, such as lots of echoing, because it sounded really hollow because they were filming in houses.
That's short-sighted. I mean, these are people who are supposed to know how to make television. Even I would think of that.
Wouldn't you have made the village and gone, okay, so all our external shots we're going to do in the village and anything on the balconies, but for houses, we'll just build to the side of the village a proper studio.
Yeah.
You would have thought that would have been the logical
thing. And that's how
a lot
of those are. Emmerdale, all the exterior shots, it's a real village. You know, even Last of the Summer Wine, the exterior shots is a real village.
Maybe they spent all their money on billboard marketing.
Do you think part of this is some BBC executives and producers went, how the fuck can we spend the summer in Spain? Any other reasons why it didn't work?
Plots. Yeah, possibly in a bid to court media attention. Bearing in mind, we are talking 1992 here.
Yep.
The show opened with a controversial story of a middle-aged man, Bunny, returning from the UK with his new 17-year-old bride, Fizz.
17.
17. So, so I was just about to say barely legal, but that is...
I mean, that's legal, but it's not good,
not morally good, but it is legal.
How old is he then?
I seem to remember him being sort of about 50, late 40. Is. Anyway, the thing is that many viewers felt that this storyline was implausible and sordid.
Sordid, maybe, but...
Not implausible.
Not implausible.
I've seen people in Brighton and you think, where did you buy her from? So, actually, incidentally, that chap Bunny was played by a guy called Roger Walker. Now, Roger was originally on Rainbow as part of Rod, Jane and Freddie. But in those days, there was no Freddie. So they were actually called Rod, Jane and Roger. And because I'm 75 years old, I remember
Roger. You remember Rod, Jane and Roger?
I remember Rod, Jane and Roger. Yeah.
Jesus. Does no way does that go off the tongue as good as Rod, Jane and Freddie.
Doesn't, does it?
Poor old Roger. Bunny... I mean, that's a paedophile name, if ever there was one.
Well, Bunny. Yeah.
Bunny.
She, Fizz, I remember, was quite strong, I don't know whereabouts, strong northern accent. She'd always be going, Bunny, Bunny.
Bunny.
Yeah, poor old Fizz. She was played by a lady called Kathy Pitkin, who never acted again after El Dorado, apart from one season in Panto. On top of this, though, ITV decided to air a special one-hour edition of Coronation Street on El Dorado's first evening in an attempt to sabotage it. Cruel, but it worked.
You would, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You would.
Of course you would.
Why wouldn't you?
Of course you would.
What was it up against generally?
Don't know.
Because if it was getting 2 million viewers, basically they're turning over because you had to be watching television. Everyone was watching television.
Basically,
everyone would just watch Corrie.
So I think I've done an excellent job there of highlighting some of the problems with El Dorado.
So it was bad writing, crap acting, up against... one of the most popular TV shows of all time.
Yes, and sound problems by sound being problems. Up in the hills of Mard Bayer, not in a studio.
Yeah, so a sort of triumvirate, not a triumvirate, what's four things? A quadrifuck.
Quadrifuck.
It was a quadrifuck of
fuckery.
Yeah.
Give me the backlash then, Phil.
So, BBC have a show that nobody liked. Costly production of the show was used by critics of the television licence to argue that the BBC was wasting their money. People absolutely fucking hate paying TV licence.
They do, and it's so expensive, isn't it? Oh, it's, what is it, 34p a day for everything the BBC? Yeah. Oh, isn't it outrageous? I really hate people who slag off the TV licence.
I do too,
Do you know what you're getting for that?
You get so much.
I'd pay that for Radio 4.
Yeah, on its own.
Yeah.
I suppose the point is you can't not pay it. That's the problem.
I suppose, yeah, you're duty bound to, yeah.
Yeah,
but you don't get adverts.
It's a little bit like saying like you're going to have to pay like a licence to have a dog, even if you haven't got a dog. Go and got a dog, mate. Yeah, but you can get a dog. That's literally what it is. You can't cut the plug off a dog.
Yeah, how many people have got a TV and don't ever watch the BBC, though? I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
And I'm sorry, I've got no truck with people moaning about the cost of the licence or what the BBC spends our licence payers' money on. Like, Points of View, people who write into Points of View, fuck off and get a life.
Yeah.
I didn't want to swear on this podcast either.
Why not? Fucky cunt tits.
I don't want to be a dirty, ungrateful gentleman.
Okay. Okay, brilliant. Thing is, I mean, I can see it, right? It looks expensive.
Yes.
Right? The money's up there on the screen. Mm. People, I suppose, would be like going, hold on, I'm paying for this shit. I'm paying for people to have a nice jolly in Spain.
I can only afford mutton.
Exactly. Big mutton boom in the early 90s. Due to the stresses of internal feuding, the BBC loves an internal feud.
Oh.
Producer Julia Smith had a nervous breakdown and left the soap opera to be replaced by Corrine Hollingworth. Am I saying that right?
I think so. I've never heard of her, but...
She brought about many changes by hiring new scriptwriters.
Wise.
Tick. Creating extra rehearsal time. Tick.
Wise.
And removing inexperienced and poor actors who had attracted initial criticism, which probably would have fixed it.
Mm, yeah, you think so? It certainly improved.
Yeah.
I remember as a viewer, it really did ramp up and just became noticeably sleeker, better.
Slicker, better. What a shame, right?
Yeah.
Despite Hollingworth's changes improving the ratings, it got 9 to 10 million viewers.
That's not bad.
Pretty good.
Not bad.
I mean, doable. You know,
you could work with that.
You could work with that.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be good nowadays.
Yeah, but it got better and better and better. I just need to give it time. Although the quality of the storylines improved, people still said there just wasn't enough to justify its continued production. And rumours, Phil, rumours started circulating that it was going to be axed.
I remember those rumours.
Dear,
yeah,
dirty
it's a bit
rumors.
Sad. Yeah, I didn't want it to happen. A lot of people didn't want it to happen. If you liked it, you liked it.
Yeah, love it. A proper love or hate thing, right? At the time, new controller took over the BBC, Phil.
A chap called Alan Yentob.
Alan Yentob. He wasted no time in fulfilling those rumours. And on the 9th of July 1993, after just 156 episodes, El Dorado was wiped from the face of the earth. Bit of snobbery, do you think?
Yeah, he kind of was quite up for the BBC being a bit highbrow, wasn't he, Alan Yentob? And I think there was about sort of the same time as sort of BBC Charter saying it had to be more educational, and he probably thought this isn't. So, yeah, I think a bit of snobbery. I think it's a real shame.
He said there had been chaos up there. There had been bloody chaos up there.
Up in the hills.
Problems on the set, a change of producer, lots of things weren't working. We saw costs not coming down. And I had other things in mind, art galleries and stuff, I should imagine, that would have been difficult to achieve given the investment in El Dorado. I gave it a bit of a chance for a few weeks and looked at whether it was potentially going to get any better, and then I cancelled it.
No!
So he basically just kicked it in the balls, I think. Whereas, it was getting 10 million viewers, he could have gone, can we punt it up? You know, make it a little bit more highbrow? You know, and then, you know, give it another year, the rest of it. But I suppose if it was still being extremely expensive to make. But then you're just cutting your losses, aren't you? Because now you've got a town that you've built in Spain with nothing in it.
They could have used that as a holiday home for BBC execs.
I bet they bloody did. I bet that was what it always was.
Yeah.
Really. Okay, the series ended with one of its star characters, Marcus Tandy.
Marcus!
Who in real life wasn't called Marcus Tandy, was married to Raquel from Only Fools and Horses. Oh. Poor old Raquel from Only Fools and Horses, because her full name is Raquel from Only Fools and Horses. Marcus Tandy was married to Raquel. The last episode had him escaping an attempt on his life when his car was blown up.
Yes, I remember it well.
And then sailing off into the distance on a boat with his girlfriend...
Pilar!
Pilar.
Marcus!
You would think that they would either have them sailing off into a sunset or sailing off into like the beautiful Spanish, but it's like pitch black.
Pitch black and quite windy, isn't it? And the boat's pitching. It really looks like sort of amateur footage of some bloke's fishing trip at night.
Yeah, it really looks
not romantic.
You know, a sort of a Colombian drug deal or something like that.
Making it out into the water.
Marcus. And some viewers noticed that the car blown up was now, in fact, not Marcus's cool Renault Alpine.
Beautiful car.
But the thinly disguised and much cheaper Triumph TR7.
Ah.
It's a full-on shot as well. Like, you'd be able to tell. It's not like it's misty or anything.
No, it's pretty obvious. I mean, those were very desirable cars, those Renault Alpines. They were very expensive turbo super sports cars. They were, at the time, they were about 60-odd grand.
Really?
Yeah, I wanted one. Never going to got one. Funny enough, cheap TR7, I did have.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you get the one that was blown up?
It did virtually blow up in the end. Yeah.
Like a piece of shit. The final line of dialogue was delivered by Tandy. And was Phil, do you want to give this some pathos?
Yeah, all right. Okay. You can't trust anyone these days, can you? I think it's double meaning there, can't you?
I think
being
it's a double meaning.
The show being cancelled. Yeah.
And if you were in any doubt to the double meaning, the final credits rolled over a final heartwarming treat for its loyal audience. Simon May's theme tune was given words for one time and one time only. Do you want to listen to the words?
Yeah.
It was over before it had begun. Often love can go that way, and I don't blame you for your point of view. You wanted freedom, I wanted you.
But when you go away, you gotta let me where you're going to, so I can share your El Dorado dreams.
Chris Rea, ladies and gentlemen.
It's a dig, right? I mean, it's a dig.
Oh, that is a dig, isn't it?
It was over before it had begun.
Yep.
And love can go that way, but I don't blame you.
Fucking blaming them. For their point of view.
From your point of view. You wanted freedom, as in from El Dorado. But I wanted you, i.e. the BBC. Yeah. I wanted you to fucking put up.
Yeah.
You know,
Put some love into this.
Put some love into it. Yeah. Put a little bit of, you know, impetus. Let's make this shit work rather than just, you know, Alan Yentop it over with your old, with concrete. But when you go away, you got to tell me where you're going to.
Can't see any double meaning in that.
Can't
bit,
see
to
any
be
double meaning in that. No. So I can dream I'll see you once again.
I think that's just to make it sound like it's a romantic thing.
I think so.
You have a few lines that make it sound like a love story.
Yeah, then you
whereas
can get away with.
Whereas the Partridge sort of, needless to say, I had the last laugh bit is in here.
Sort of like you've got beautiful eyes, you've got a beautiful smile. Don't cancel our TV show. Also, I loved our time together in Paris.
Simon May, who wrote that theme tune, also wrote the theme tune to EastEnders.
Lovely.
Do you want to know what else he wrote the theme tune to?
No.
Holiday 86. We all remember that, don't we? With Cliff Mitchell Moore. Might not have been him. Might have been Paul Ross. I don't know. Pet Rescue.
Yeah. Which I always think of as Petrescu.
The old Dan Petrescu thing, yeah. The old Chelsea player. And that famous song, that famous TV show, You Know What You Ate Last Summer, which I never watched, but I can guess what that is, and that's a great title.
Phil, you know what's happening now?
Oh, yeah.
This is my favourite bit.
Aftermath.
Give us the aftermath. I want to hear the aftermath. I'm so tired.
Phil Gerrard, All Is Not Lost.
Oh, good.
Despite El Dorado disappearing 25 years ago, all 156 episodes are available on YouTube.
Really?
I think we should watch them all.
They're all on YouTube?
They're all on YouTube.
That's amazing.
Yeah, let's watch them.
Okay.
Let's do it. And perhaps better than that, and not only are we going to watch TV together, I think you and I need to go on a holiday.
Yeah.
The £2 million purpose-built set in the hills of Marbella is still there.
Brilliant.
Now used for paintballing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Have you ever been paintballing?
No.
It is bullshit.
It's for twats.
It is bullshit paintballing.
But I would go paintballing if it meant I could do it round the El Dorado set. Now, I wouldn't do any paintballing. I'd just walk round the El Dorado set. Also, 8 cast members took the BBC to court over alleged unpaid wages.
Oh, did they win?
Don't know, actually. Oh. Could not find the result, despite all my legal research.
Oh, what happened?
It is widely thought, though, that El Dorado is the reason why the BBC has not attempted to launch a brand new primetime soap from scratch since, because it was bitten and it is now doubly shy. But I guess, Phil, the most important thing that we all want to know is what happened to that German who couldn't act called Kaya Mura.
Yeah.
He didn't go back to playing his trumpet on stage.
Oh.
He says, after El Dorado, I went to the UK and I studied acting. It lasted a while, but I found the only parts that I were getting was comedy Germans or Nazis. 25 years on, he's now a flying instructor at Rochester Airport.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Oh, hi, Kai. He seems like a lovely bloke.
Yeah, good on him. I think he knew. He was like, I couldn't act. Yeah. But, hey,
he doesn't sound like he ever wanted to act. He was just on holiday.
He was bumming around.
You can't just dye your hair and expect everything to go your way. I've learned that from bitter experience. So that was the absolute tragic demise. I think unfair demise.
I think it was unfair.
Of El Dorado. I don't think it was shit. I think it wasn't allowed to grow.
Totally agree with you.
Do you know what I mean? It was like basically like they planted the seed and then fucking chuck the flower pot into a skip without waiting to see what beautiful, wonderful Spanish soap opera seeds would grow. So, in the final analysis, El Dorado, was it our fault or God's fault?
Marcus, I think it was the committee's on the BBC's fault, possibly Alan Yentop's fault. That means it's our fault.
It's our fault. Mm. Our fault, yeah. I think it's sad.
I think it's sad. I think Marcus Tandy was one of the best bad boys on soap. I think he was really good.
He was good,
I'd like to have been Marcus Tandy.
Slicked back black hair. Mm. Yeah.
Ooh, it was a heartthrob.
So, that was the demise of El Dorado. Phil, do you enjoy it?
I did. Good to reminisce about good telly.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? And also a simpler time.
Oh, better time.
A better time, I think. Than
no internet.
No internet.
No identity politics.
No identity politics, that's right. And what were we dealing with? Nothing, really. you know, a bit of Tony Blair. What do we have in the 90s?
92, when that was on, it was John Major.
John Major, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
he never
fine.
Offended anyone except his wife when he slept with Edwina Curry.
Edwina Curry, yeah. I was just trying to think of what big news, horrible things happened. Kosovo happened in the 90s.
That was about that sort of time, yeah.
So basically the Balkans was happening, and that's not nice for them, but we were fine. Yeah. I can't think of anything really that was bad about the 90s. Even Britpop was fine.
Yeah, I think Britpop was the last final hurrah of old school ways of doing music and movements and things like that.
Yeah.
Better times.
Better times. Right, so on that nostalgic note,
better times.
Tinged of sadness, a single tear runs down Phil Lucas's cheek.
Better times.
What are we doing next time, Phil?
San Francisco earthquake of 1906.
Wicked. I love a San Francisco earthquake because how many of them have there been?
Oh, loads.
Loads and loads. But this is the big one.
This is the big one.
Okay.
And we think it's going to happen again.
Very soon, probably. It's overdue, actually, isn't it?
It is.
But, you know, I'm sure they're building houses on stilts and all the rest of it to try and deal with it. Or maybe they aren't. I don't know how Americans operate. So thank you very much for listening to this, the fifth episode of the CB Wallop podcast.
Sixth, I believe.
Is it?
Oh, yes.
Yes, the sixth. All right, the sixth. Let's just say it's the sixth. Just for sake of argument, right? I mean, you say it's the sixth, I say it's the fifth. Who's to say what the reality is, right?
Is it post-truth world again?
I feel like it's the...
I feel like it's that way.
Don't think that you can really...
I don't want to hurt your feelings.
No, it's fine.
No, it's fine. No, if you say it's the fifth, even though it's the sixth.
No, I mean, I just, as a man who, you know, has had difficulty with maths in the past, you know, I've had a lot of unlocked trauma about... getting sums wrong, and like I've just decided that, you know, I'm just going to own that now, and like, you know, just
no, I respect that
numbers.
This will be the fifth.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't realise is that numbers aren't absolute. Thank you very much for listening. If you could give us a review, if you like this podcast, on something, because I was on the computer the other day and I couldn't find any reviews for this.
No, I don't think we got any. And the thing is about reviews is it's very kind you take the time to do them. We appreciate it. It takes people time and it's inconvenient. But the way algorithms and stuff work, apparently it really helps. And of course, I mean, yes, we're just happy doing this, but it'd be nice to get out to as many people as possible who may like it. And it's not for vanity. We don't get any money. We don't get anything out of doing this. We just like talking about disasters.
You know, if anyone could see us doing it, they would realise it's not for vanity. We're not vain men. You would not call us vain men.
Oh, I have to undo my trousers to do this recording.
Absolutely.
Be comfortable.
So, yes, please do review the show if something asks you to. That would be amazing. Contact us on Twitter if you've got any ideas for disasters you think we should cover. And fuck Facebook. Delete that because that's bad for your mental health. Otherwise, unless you've got anything to add, Philip Lucas.
No, the caffeine crash has happened now. I'm tired.
Phil's had a caffeine crash. And so we will see you next time with the San Francisco earthquake of 1906. Thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.